Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Konstantin Sonin from the New Economic School in Moscow. Konstantin and I met at the European Economic Association's annual meetings in Milan in August 2008, where we spoke about his research on Stalin as a rational dictator. He began by explaining what he'd been looking at.
Stalin is a kind of a topic where everybody has an opinion. It's like football or, I don't know, medicine. Everybody knows something about Stalin, understands something about Stalin. But in this paper, we tried to use the most recent archival materials. They were like obtained literally 2 or 3 years ago by Paul Gregory and his team working in Moscow archives to put a rational perspective on Stalin's behavior, and we show that there are some very clear, some rational patterns. So this is not just random acts of terror or not a terror campaign that just try to scare everybody around. And some of the terror campaigns, they have extremely irrational explanations.
Okay, so give us the background on that, sort of the historical setting, and then how other people have thought about it.
So this is basically a paper about 20s and 30s, and the scale of repression at this time, on average, it was about 1 million, 1.5 million people per year who either would go to a labor camp with a very high death rate there, or will be just executed. Probably about 5 to 6 million people were executed during this period, and in the peacetime, this is an extremely high number. So in a country with a relatively standard European background, as Russia was by the end of the 19th century, the 20th century, the beginning of the 20th century, started an extremely an unusual page, and like no other European country had a terror at this kind of scale. And so there are a lot of explanations which are somehow irrational or historical. And we try to see what would Stalin do if he were a politician who as rational as a democratic politician, but he has this option to trim his quote-unquote electorate. He could eliminate some people and then to satisfy the other people. So we have a theory that instead of just adjusting to the median voter position as a democratic politician would do, he probably eliminated a part of the electorate and then pondered to the median voter position of the remainder. And basically what we try to infer from the model is that what are the determinants of these repression waves? And we saw that when the main threat was, inside domestic, inside the country, so when the policy was tilted toward the industrial cities, so it was very much at the cost of the peasants have to pay the price. Then there was a terror campaign against the peasants, and at this time this terror was like very, very much focused against the richest part of peasantry. So you basically, like, for every person you could easily identify whether he belongs to the enemies of Stalin or not to belong. In contrast, when there was a huge and a very bloody power struggle at the top in mid-30s, then Stalin tried to get rid of the supporters of those who opposed him in the parliament and in the Politburo, and here there were much less clear criteria who are the enemy and who is not. So this time you have much less chances to determine whether you are you have high chances to be repressed or you have low chances to be repressed. And so we basically throughout the paper we have 3 pages devoted to the model, and then we go to the through this archival evidence number by number and to show that when there was a threat from Polish uprising and on the borders of the Soviet Union, then these again were terror waves which were very much confined to those who are Polish nationals, because you could just go to look at the passport. If it's written that you are Polish national, in Soviet passports we have the nationality record, and you repress them. But when you struggle against, say, Trotskyists, then you do not have this clear label.
So the idea is basically of your model that it's a rational response to the threat of you being overthrown or having some rebellion from the population of your country.
I would say that our model is pretty standard. It's like Persson and Tabilini, Asimoglu and Robinson model. The idea is to tell economists that you could think about Stalin and his repression in exactly this economics textbook way.
So the new thing is really being able to go and look at this data and see how it works out.
This is what we think is our contribution.
Yes, yeah. What do you think the lessons we can draw from this are? I mean, it's a very, very different way of thinking about a major historical event of the 20th century that has sort of ways of interpreting modern...
When you look at modern dictatorship, when you look at Fidel Castro in Cuba, when you look at Alexander Lukashenko in Belarus, you would see that they very much followed this policy, not by eliminating physically people, but just forcing them to immigrate. So they would have a much higher level of support among those who remain. So actually, what this evidence implies is that open borders could be dictators' best friend. That if you have the possibility to push your enemies from the country, this helps you to solidify support among those who remain.
How do you think of it in terms of somebody like Mugabe in Zimbabwe, someone who's, I guess, pushed people out of the country, but also he's killed lots of people within the country?
Oh, yeah. No, the thing is that if you could support your power by brute force without, like, sophisticated rational strategies, then you have no problems. So Mugabe did this thing. He tried to push all the white farmers, the richest part of the population from Zimbabwe, which play an enormously important role in Zimbabwean economy. But to solidify his support among his like core constituency, it was important for him to push these white farmers out of the country. This is actually not unheard of in democratic politics. Andrzej Schleifer and Ed Glaser had a paper on these kind of policies, of course without executions and of course without imprisonment in Boston, in local city politics, they termed this Curley effect for the name of some James Curley, an Irish mayor of Boston, who very much tried to push other people of other nationalities from the area and so solidify his support for the next elections.
So in fact it's something we might see across a number of different kinds of politicians, and Stalin is just a very extreme example.
Oh yeah, this is like a very visible example, and also this is an example where you have a lot of people who know how to work with archives. Not every, like, there are no good community of scholars who study Mugabe yet, and I hope there will never be. But for Stalin, there are hundreds of people who knows who tries to learn his life minute by minute. So we really could document his decision making process, and so to study it.
Konstantin Sonin, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.